Picture this. You are working in the emergency department seeing Poonam, a 29-year-old woman who presents with right leg pain. She tells you, "I thought it was just stiff, but it feels hot, and the back of my calf is sore to the touch. I called my doctor's office, and they said I might need some tests, so to come to the ER." She has just returned from an extended trip overseas. "I got a great deal on the plane ticket, but taking two long flights trapped in a middle seat was rough." She is generally healthy. Her only medication is oral contraceptive pills. On exam, her vital signs and oxygen saturation are normal. Her right calf is slightly erythematous, with tenderness that extends up into the popliteal fossa. The calf circumference is about 3 centimeters larger than on the left side. The thigh is not tender. Her cardiopulmonary exam is normal. You tell her that her doctor's office was correct. She does need some tests. What test do you order for Poonam? What is your working diagnosis? And how would you manage her condition? Welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Laurel Toft, bringing cardiology from our bricks to your ears. After completing this section, you will be able to 1. Define venous thromboembolism, VTE, deep vein thrombosis, DVT, and pulmonary embolism, PE. 2. Describe the clinical presentation of DVT. 3. List the major risk factors for developing DVT. 4. Describe the role of laboratory and radiographic tests in the diagnosis of DVT. And 5. Describe the management of DVT. Part 1. What is deep vein thrombosis? Before we dive in, let's review some terminology. Thrombi are clots that form within blood vessels, most frequently in the venous system, although they do occasionally occur in arteries. Emboli are pieces of clot, air bubbles, or other objects that travel through the bloodstream to other places in the body, where they become lodged in vessels. Venous thromboembolism, or VTE, is an umbrella term that covers both deep vein thrombosis, DVT, and pulmonary embolism, PE. A DVT is a thrombus or clot that forms in one of the deep veins of an extremity, such as the femoral or brachial vein. A PE, remember the word embolism is in the name, is most commonly caused by a piece of clot that breaks off from a DVT, travels up through the right side of the heart, and lodges in the pulmonary arterial system. Quiz time. What differentiates emboli from thrombi? Thrombi are clots that form in blood vessels, whereas emboli are pieces of thrombi that travel to other places in the body. Part 2. How do patients with deep vein thrombosis present? DVTs are found in the extremities, most commonly in the legs. The most common symptoms are unilateral swelling of the unaffected leg, often with pain and redness. A palpable cord may be present. This occurs when superficial veins in the legs are dilated and enlarged because they receive collateral circulation from the deep venous system, which is engorged due to the thrombus. In addition, the patient may experience increased pain with passive dorsiflexion of the ankle. This pain is known as Hohmann sign and is caused by irritation of the calf muscles. Let's see if you got that. Question. Are the symptoms of a DVT usually unilateral or bilateral? Answer is, DVT symptoms are usually unilateral. Part 3. What is the pathophysiology of deep vein thrombosis? A healthy coagulation system is fine-tuned to clot when injuries occur and to not clot otherwise. However, in pathologic states, this balance can be disrupted. 3 general conditions predispose our patients to thrombus formation: endothelial damage, abnormal blood flow, and hypercoagulability. This is known as Virchow's triad, and it's a really important concept to remember. Let's review how these different factors can cause patients to develop clots. First, endothelial damage. The coagulation cascade responds to acute epithelial or endothelial damage, whether from a knife cut, including surgery, or a ruptured atherosclerotic plaque. The response is to precipitate formation of a clot. Risk factors like smoking and hypertension cause chronic long-term damage to the endothelium of blood vessels, which tips the balance of the coagulation system, making it easier to form clot. That's part of how these risk factors predispose to myocardial infarction, which is basically a blood clot inside a coronary artery. Next, abnormal blood flow. Physiologically, blood is supposed to flow smoothly through the body, roughly in a path parallel to the vessel wall. This so-called laminar flow keeps platelets and clotting factors from interacting with each other. However, in certain pathological conditions, blood can either slow down, called stasis, or move in a disorganized manner, called turbulence. Either change allows platelets and clotting factors to start mingling and potentially creating clots. Some causes of abnormal blood flow are immobility, for example, lying in a hospital bed or sitting during a long flight, central venous catheters, varicose veins, and atrial fibrillation. And the final member of Virchow's triad, hypercoagulability. Any medical condition that increases the risk of clot formation can increase the risk of DVT. Such conditions that cause hypercoagulability include cancer, use of estrogen-containing contraceptives, pregnancy, and obesity. Rarely, hypercoagulability may be due to hereditary thrombotic disorders like factor V Leiden mutation, prothrombin gene mutation, and protein C and S deficiencies. Hereditary causes should be suspected if a patient develops what we call an unprovoked DVT, meaning without risk factors or precipitating events like immobility. Question time. What is Virchow's triad? Virchow's triad are the three conditions that predispose a person to thrombosis: endothelial damage, abnormal blood flow, and hypercoagulability. So what's the big deal about a little blood clot and a swollen leg? Well, let's talk about potential complications of DVT. The most serious complication of DVT is a pulmonary embolism, in which a thrombus embolizes from the venous system and lands in the pulmonary arterial system. This can be fatal, and it is why diagnosing and treating DVT is so crucial. Why are the lungs the major target of venous emboli? Well, emboli move from their venous location into larger and larger veins, then into the vena cava, then into the right heart. The next place that is small enough for them to get stuck is in the pulmonary circulation, which gets progressively smaller after the pulmonary artery exits the right side of the heart. Remember that pulmonary arteries carry deoxygenated blood from the right ventricle of the heart to the lung capillary beds for gas exchange. Less commonly, emboli can bypass the lungs. This occurs when an abnormal passage exists between the right and left sides of the heart, for example, an atrial septal defect. In that case, what we call paradoxical emboli can pass directly from the right to the left side of the heart. From there, they can go to the brain, leading to stroke, or to peripheral arteries supplying muscles or vital organs, leading to ischemic tissue injury. Even after treatment, patients with DVT may be at risk for post-thrombotic syndrome. This is chronic venous insufficiency that occurs in up to 50% of patients who have had a DVT. It causes leg pain, edema, skin ulcers, and discoloration. It's treated with leg elevation and compression. Rarely, patients with DVT may develop a massive iliofemoral DVT called phlegmasia caerulea dolens. Here, the venous drainage of the extremity is almost entirely occluded, and the patient can develop massive edema, cyanosis, and even gangrene. This occurs mostly in patients with concurrent malignancy. And unlike the other types of DVT, these patients receive urgent thrombectomy, usually surgical, since immediate removal of the clot is needed to preserve the limb or even the patient's life. Part 4. How do we diagnose deep vein thrombosis? Although clinical findings may point toward a diagnosis of DVT, a risk stratification tool is used to determine which additional tests are needed for the diagnosis, with the options being D-dimer blood test or ultrasonography. A clinical decision tool is used to answer the question, what is the likelihood that this patient has a DVT? This is called determining the pre-test probability of the disease, meaning the likelihood of the disease being present before any test is done. The Wells score for DVT is an example of such a tool. There's no need to memorize the Wells score since it's easily referenced, but you can think of the criteria in two categories, risk factors and clinical presentation. The criteria included are active cancer, immobilization of the lower extremity, recently bedridden or major surgery, localized tenderness, entire leg swollen, calf swollen greater than 3 centimeters compared to the other leg, pitting edema in the symptomatic leg, collateral superficial veins, previously documented DVT, and lastly, a funny one that subtracts points for, quote, alternative diagnosis at least as likely as DVT. Patients with a low or moderate Wells score will receive a D-dimer blood test to further evaluate the likelihood of DVT. Patients with a moderate or high Wells score will require a combination of a D-dimer test and ultrasonography. So what is a D-dimer? Well, D-dimer is a fibrin degradation product that is elevated in the serum of patients with active thrombus. An elevated D-dimer test indicates thrombus formation and breakdown. Physiologically, fibrinogen is constantly being converted to fibrin, resulting in tiny but detectable levels of D-dimer in all individuals, and these levels increase as we age. So unfortunately, a D-dimer blood test is sensitive but not specific for DVT. This means that other conditions besides DVT may also cause an increased D-dimer level, such as cigarette smoking, infection, surgery, and pregnancy. If any of these conditions are present, an elevation in D-dimer could be due to the condition, or the patient might have a DVT. Let's pause for a question. What is D-dimer test? D-dimer is a fibrin degradation product, a byproduct of thrombus formation and breakdown, that is used to help in the diagnosis of DVT. The other diagnostic test is ultrasonography. Compression ultrasonography is the best radiographic modality to determine if a patient has a DVT. This test is usually ordered in patients with moderate and high pretest probability for DVT, as well as in those with an elevated D-dimer. Under normal circumstances, pressure applied to a vein by the ultrasound transducer will cause that vein to completely collapse. Presence of a clot prevents the vessel from collapsing, even when the clot may not be visualized. Part 5. How do we manage deep vein thrombosis? DVT can and should be prevented in at-risk patients, but then treated aggressively once diagnosed. Let's talk first about prevention. Patients in hospitals are at higher risk of developing a DVT because of prolonged immobilization, trauma leading to endothelial damage, and sometimes infection and inflammation leading to hypercoagulability. To prevent this, you will see that most patients are placed on anticoagulant agents while they are in the hospital as prophylaxis against DVT. Most often, this is low molecular weight heparin, for example, enoxaparin. Those with high bleeding risks, like GI bleeding or hemorrhagic stroke, who cannot take anticoagulants, can be treated with mechanical leg compression devices, but these are less effective than anticoagulant medications for preventing DVT. The treatment for a DVT is anticoagulation. Anticoagulation prevents clots from forming or from getting bigger, allowing the body's natural anticoagulation system to break down the clot over time. It's important to remember that anticoagulants do not actually bust up the clot itself. That type of drug is called a thrombolytic. Anticoagulants do exactly what the name implies, preventing coagulation, allowing the body to break down the clot through its own intrinsic fibrinolytic cascade. Traditionally, heparin is the immediate drug of choice for DVT, followed by warfarin for long-term anticoagulation. But over the past 20 years, low molecular weight heparin, enoxaparin, replaced intravenous heparin for the acute management of VTE. More recently, direct oral anticoagulants, referred to as DOACs, D-O-A-C, have become available, such as rivaroxaban or apixaban, and are now the preferred treatment for DVT. Question. What class of medication is the main treatment used for DVT? Answer is, the main class of medication used to treat DVT is anticoagulant medications. And that's it for deep vein thrombosis. Let's check your knowledge and see what you've learned today. First, can you define thrombi, deep vein thrombosis, DVT, and pulmonary embolism, PE? Thrombi are clots that form in a vessel. Deep vein thromboses are clots formed in the deep veins of an extremity. A pulmonary embolism is a piece of clot that breaks off, travels through the venous system, and lands in the pulmonary circulation. Next, what is the clinical presentation of DVT? DVTs usually present as unilateral limb swelling, redness, and pain. They are most common in legs, but are possible in the upper extremities. Now, can you describe the risk factors for developing DVT? Hint, think of Virchow's triad. Patients with abnormal blood flow, endothelial dysfunction, and hypercoagulability are at risk for venous thromboembolic disease. These are the three components of the Virchow triad. What are three potential serious complications of DVT? Complications of DVT include pulmonary embolus, post-thrombotic syndrome with venous insufficiency, and phlegmasia caerulea dolens, occlusion of the iliofemoral veins. Next, how is a DVT diagnosed? A DVT is diagnosed using D-dimer testing and deep vein duplex ultrasound. The Wells score is a risk stratification tool that helps clinicians decide which of these tests to order. And lastly, what is the treatment for DVT? DVT is primarily treated by using anticoagulation. Direct oral anticoagulants, DOACs, such as rivaroxaban or apixaban, are now preferred. And we're done. Armed with your newfound knowledge, let's think back to your patient from the beginning of this episode. You are seeing Poonam, who presented with unilateral leg swelling and tenderness after a long flight. You quickly calculate her Wells score, which is... moderately elevated. Your suspicion of DVT is confirmed by elevated D-dimer and lower extremity ultrasound. You explain to Poonam how sluggish blood flow out of her legs during the flights is probably what allowed the clots to develop. You also explain that taking estrogen contraceptive is known to increase the risk of these clots. After Poonam's pregnancy test is negative, she receives rivaroxaban, a direct oral anticoagulant, that she will continue taking for several months. You instruct her to follow up with her primary care provider. And that's our show. If you liked this episode, send us a comment or give us a thumbs up. Until next time.